I think some of you here were at the service where I was installed, or whatever the word is, at Holy Ascension when Bishop Robert was there. I will always remember the opening words of Bishop Robert's sermon to us that evening, because he said, "I know in this benefice you don't talk a lot about saints' days, but today is St. Cuthbert or St. Columba or one of them, one of those Irish ones," and then he spoke about that. Well, he's right, we don't often talk about saints' days, but today happens to be the saint's day of one of my favourite saints, and that is St. Anselm of Canterbury. He is one of my favourite saints because he was somebody who was on fire with love for Jesus, was also a prodigious mind. He was Archbishop of Canterbury from 1093 to 1109. His piety got him in trouble with both King William II and King Henry I, so he was exiled under the reign of each of those kings because he stuck to the gospel message despite what they wanted him to say. But he also wrote some extremely important works, and one of them was called Cur Deus Homo in Latin, which means, why did God become man? And what he said in that work relates to what we're going to be thinking about this evening. So why did God become man in Jesus? I wonder what you would say if somebody asked you, why did God have to become a man in Jesus Christ? What would your answer be? Well, here was Anselm's answer. He deeply understood the great debt which humans owe to God, because we owe him our thanks for the fact that he brought us into existence. We owe him our worship because he's so majestically all-powerful and all-good and all-beautiful. We owe him our love for all the love he's shown us. And yet we neither thank him nor worship him nor adore him as he deserves. Think of a parent who's not only flawlessly loving and kind, but who also dies to save the life of their child. Think of the attitude that the child should have to that parent, and then times it by a billion. That's the attitude we should be having towards God. And yet, of course, we know that in human nature, the opposite happens. That humans reject, resent, and replace God. And therefore, we owe him a colossal debt, which we're both unable and, let's face it, unwilling to pay. But, said Anselm, for this reason, God became man. For this reason, Jesus came into the world, that he might pay that infinitely unpayable debt himself, that we might be forgiven for all that we've done to God. And so we turn to our reading from Matthew's Gospel. And it begins with Peter thinking he's being awfully magnanimous and showing off, in fact, to Jesus by saying, how many times should I forgive my brother? Because the prevailing thought at the time was that three forgivenesses was incredibly kind. So Peter saying seven, he imagined Jesus would say, well done, Peter, that's really generous. But of course, Jesus says, of course not seven, as if on the eighth time you'd stop forgiving. He says not seven, but 77, or some translations, 70 times seven. And again, that doesn't mean on the 78th time we stop forgiving. Jesus is saying symbolically there should be no end to your forgiveness. And Jesus shows why in the parable. Because here is this servant who owed the master 10,000 talents. Now, a talent was the equivalent of 20 years' worth of wages in those days. So to translate it into modern terms, owing 10,000 talents would be like personally owing someone £7 billion. And of course, you're never going to be able to pay back £7 billion. Jesus isn't saying that's a real number. He's saying that's the kind of thing that we owe God. In other words, we owe the master of our lives such an amazingly, infinitely massive debt that we are not able to pay it ourselves. And next, Jesus shows us the absolute impossibility of withholding forgiveness towards others. Because this servant, his unpayable debt now amazingly cleared, refuses to clear the comparatively small debt of another servant. And the denarii here is probably the equivalent to £12,000. Now, of course, £12,000 is a lot of money, isn't it? No doubt the servant, the wicked servant, thought to himself, he owes me so much that I need to wring it out of him. But of course, as we'll see, in comparison to £7 billion, it's absolutely nothing. Importantly, when this other servant begs for mercy, the wicked servant says, no, I'm not going to show you mercy. And then we're told, when the other servants saw what had happened, they were greatly distressed and went and told the master. So in the end, the wicked servant ends up in exactly the same position as where he started, with this completely unpayable debt to his name. Now, there are two different attitudes among the servants in this parable. There are those who find lack of forgiveness distressing, and there's the one who has absolutely no problem with a lack of forgiveness. And Jesus hints at the difference between these two types of servant in verse 35 at the end of our reading. It's the last word of that chapter. He says, "This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother from your heart." What makes the difference here is the heart attitude of these two different groups of servants. And I find it so crucial that the servants of verse 31, their heart attitude is to see unforgiveness and be distressed. Now, this English word is rather watered down. The original means they experienced deep emotional pain and severe sorrow at the sight of refusal to forgive. And this can't mean that they were just sorrowed by what was happening to that poor servant, having the £12,000 wrung out of him. If that's all they were concerned about, they would have run to the situation, they'd have chastised the wicked servant, and they'd have tried to help the poor servant. But no, what's the first thing they do immediately when they see this? They go and see the master. Because they know this matter ultimately has to do with him. I think what it boils down to here is that the wicked servant refused to accept in his heart the reality of just how massive his debt was. And you can see that by verse 26. Verse 26 is really interesting. You might have noticed when it was being read out. But he's got this £7 billion debt, and how does he react to that? He says, "Give me some more time and I will pay back everything." Really? You're going to pay back £7 billion? He can't understand how much he owes. He can't really think that he owes that much. Otherwise, he wouldn't have promised to pay it back himself. All he would have said is, "I am completely unable to pay this. I completely fall at your mercy." But no, he's still trying to control it himself. He says, "I'm going to find some way of paying this back." Because he doesn't really understand or accept just how massive this debt is. He therefore refused to accept just how infinite the consequences would be if the master refused him forgiveness. Do you see? He's saying, "Look, if you don't forgive me, it's not a problem. I'll just still be able to earn it back somehow. I'll still be able to do it myself." He's not realizing that he will never in a million years be able to pay this debt back. It's infinite, basically. Here's the thing. The very idea of no forgiveness should cause us deep emotional pain and severe sorrow. We should be those servants who are horrified when we see no forgiveness, when we see somebody withholding forgiveness from someone else. And that's because we know in our hearts what that wicked servant didn't know. And that's the infinite horror it is to have no forgiveness from God, to have our infinite debt demanded from us. False religion always does the same thing. It always pretends that actually what we owe God isn't that much. And we can pay it back ourselves. Isn't that the message of all other non-Christian religions? God just wants you to try your best, try your hardest. Yes, you've messed up, but you can make it up to him through your good works. Because you only owe him, let's say, £5,000. Great, let's roll our sleeves up then and all try and repay the debt. No, says Christianity, no way. Your good works will never be enough if you had a million lifetimes to repay the debt you owe God. All you can do is fall at his feet and cry out for mercy. Because there is always that drive in us to want to lessen God's demands from us, to want to lessen the debt that our sin has put us in with God. And then we become like the wicked servant, because then we are casting out of our minds what it means to not be forgiven that massive debt. That's why in the heart of a Christian, the thought, "I do not forgive you," is a source of infinite horror, because it should horrify us that God could ever or would ever say that to us. What causes me deep emotional pain and sorrow is just how many funerals I go to where so-and-so isn't talking to such-and-such. You've probably come across this yourself. And it is so not just tragic, but so desperately wrong. Even evil, I would say. Because that not talking is what this wicked servant was doing. It's a refusal to forgive. And it's being used as a tool to try and exact that, not money, but that emotional debt out of that person until they fully pay back all they owe me. Now, this current sermon series is called The Distinctive Christian Life. And that's because one of the things that should make us distinctive as Christians is that we always forgive, and that for us, lack of forgiveness is impossible. Because the problem is, Jesus makes it painfully clear. It's a really hard-hitting, very, very hard-hitting piece of the gospel, this is. Jesus says, if anyone's fine with not forgiving others, God will be fine with not forgiving them. And for us as Christians who know what that means, to have that infinite debt put to our account, which we will never be able to pay back for all eternity, we know the horror of what that means. So for us, no forgiveness cannot exist. We can't have it in our own hearts, and we can't bear to see it in others. So here's the final thing. Obviously, we need to think in our own hearts if there's anybody we're not forgiving. And when I preached this sermon this morning, there was a lovely lady in Ollington who came up to me and said, I'm going to try really hard because, you know, I'm really trying to think, is there anybody who I haven't forgiven? I think if we're in that situation, we're probably all right. I think Jesus isn't talking to those people who are thinking, do you know what, I'm not sure. Jesus is talking to those people who know, who when it comes to not forgiveness, a name will come to their mind. That person who hurt us so terribly all those years ago. And I want to return to the wicked servant because he had a £12,000 debt, remember. That's quite a sizable debt. It wasn't just 50p this guy owed him, it was £12,000. For the wicked servant, that was worth wringing out. He no doubt felt that that was a grievous thing to be owed £12,000. And I really think that for many of us, we can think what that person did to me all those years ago is worth hating them for. It's worth not forgiving them. Because there will be people probably even in our congregations who have had horrible things done to them in the past and who will find things really, really hard to forgive. And I don't want to make light of how difficult some people will find it to forgive that person who has abused them or whatever it is. But the moral of this story is whatever terrible thing other humans have done to other humans, it pales into comparison into nothing compared to how much we owe God. And so the answer, as ever in our Christian lives, is to look to the cross. And it's to encourage those people who are finding it hard to forgive to look to the cross, to say, look at the amount that Jesus suffered in your place. What was he suffering there? Why did he have to suffer so terribly? Well, he was suffering to pay back the debt that you owe. Think about how much you owe God. Think about how much he's forgiven you. Now go and forgive that other person. And of course we know it takes an awful lot of time. It takes therapy perhaps even to help these people to forgive. But the bottom line is, Jesus makes it very clear, if you can't forgive others, God will not forgive you. And so, to return to what we said at the start, those who have been forgiven much, love much. For us, it's a wondrous thing to see our huge debt and then to see that it's all been paid by Jesus on the cross. We don't lessen the debt of sin. In fact, the Puritan motto is always make much of sin, but make even more of grace. Because the more we know we're forgiven, the more we will love God. So we don't pretend that we owe God 50p or even £10,000. We recognise we owe him £7 billion. We recognise we can never pay that back, but we rejoice that Jesus paid it on our behalf. And then we go and do likewise, forgiving those around us. I'm just reminded of one last thing that Jesus said in one of our readings a few months ago. With man this is impossible, but with God all things are possible. So we should pray for our own hearts, for the hearts of those around us, for those people perhaps even unknown to us. In our church families, we're finding it hard to forgive, that God would enable them to do exactly that. So let's pray now.